Welcome to Local Bitcoiners, a podcast about Bitcoin meetups. In this episode, Reed and Rev talk about reputation, wrench attacks, and the benefits of joining the Bitcoin meetup network.
Okie dokie, local Bitcoiners. Rev Hodel, back again. And I'm always here, as always, with Reed. And tonight, or I guess in this episode, we don't have a guest, and that's great because that lets us really dive into some of the cool stuff that we do at meetups, some things that we've learned through these episodes of the podcast that we've recorded. We're just going to get into, you know, some of our thoughts on meetups in general and some of the stuff that is interesting to us. But first, as always, I'm going to get into a meetup adventure. And this last meetup that I attended was the Southwest Michigan meetup, the third Thursday of every month at Dweller's Co-working Space at 6:30 p.m. This is the fantastic circular economy meetup where so many goods and services get exchanged. People wheel and deal there big time. And at that meetup, I think the biggest topic of the discussion was this idea of using Nostr to enhance the commerce that we're doing at the meetups and at just in general, the circular economy, taking the idea of these split payments in podcasting, doing the Zap splits on the notes, and then also the Web of Trust reputation, the record of that attached to your identity. Right now, we have a pretty good reputational mechanism in that if you go to the meetups all the time for years and you never do anyone wrong, you end up with a pretty good reputation. But that's only for people who know you and who have also been meeting you for years. So if there was a way to record this reputation somewhere where somebody else could analyze it and look at it, now they might be able to trust you a little bit more quickly. And so that was the Southwest Michigan meetup. And coming up here, I'm going to be finally making my way. I've tried several times and life has gotten in the way. I'm finally going to the Chicago Bitcoin Collective for the first time next Thursday for their BitDevs there. Now, there's two BitDevs in Chicago now. There's the BitDevs on the second Thursday of the month, and that's at the Strike office downtown, 200 North LaSalle. And then there's now this other BitDevs meetup, which I guess, is that the fourth Thursday? It must be the fourth Thursday of the month at the Chicago Bitcoin Collective in Portage Park. And really the big reason why I'm even finding my way over to this meetup is because I've recently butchered some lambs and I sold one to a repeat customer over there in Chicago. And so I'm going to both deliver this lamb to the customer and check out a BitDevs. And this kind of gets back into my strategy when it comes to meetups is that I'm always trying to figure out how many different forms of capital I can stack with each meetup that I attend. And so in this meetup, I'm going to learn a lot about Bitcoin. I'm going to get some experience transacting with Bitcoin. I'm going to get some financial capital, and I'm probably going to buy something from somebody there too. And so with that, I guess, Reed, you attended a brand new meetup.
That's right.
This month.
That's right.
How did that go?
Yep. Yeah, meetup number one for, I think it's called CT Bitcoiners or CT Bitcoin. So, yep. So that was last Wednesday, May 20th at Conspiracy, which is a bar in Middletown. It was a pretty cool venue. It was in a downtown area, but it was in a little hole in the wall kind of bar. You had to go up some stairs to get there. It was pretty nice inside. It felt very kind of exclusive. We had our own little area. Great turnout. 10 people came. Me and one of the guys from my meetup, we carpooled together. But there were, we know some of those guys because there wasn't any Connecticut meetups as far as I'm aware of. So they would travel up to ours. So those guys are pretty excited now that they have something much closer for them. For me, it's about an hour away, but that makes them our nearest neighbor. So I'm thinking an hour away is really not that bad. They also do Wednesday nights at 7 p.m., which is pretty good time for me too, because that means that I can still have dinner with the family and then just head out after that without having to, you know, make a big exception or try to skip dinner or eat on my way or something like that. So I'm kind of thinking that might just become a regular meetup for me, which will be cool. Then I'll be my meetup and the CT Bitcoiners meetup each once a month. So that'll be pretty nice. And it kind of got me thinking a little bit that we do have a bunch of other meetups in my general area, but they're all like 2 hours away. And so a 2 hour drive both ways, you know, 2 hour drive each way for like, you know, a lot of times like a 2 hour Bitcoin meetup. It's worth it to see those guys every once in a while, but I'm not going to make the trip every month. But it got me thinking that I actually haven't been to some of those in quite a while now. And so I'm kind of rallying the troops a little bit for my meetup, and I'm going to try to do some road trips here where maybe I will carpool and just drive a couple of people around. So the ones I'm thinking of hitting up soon are Rhode Island. There's a Boston BitDevs. Boston BitDevs I did go to this past fall. That was a pretty good time. And then Albany, New York. So Albany, New York is also about 2 hours. And, you know, we're friends with those guys too. So these are all people that we know. We just don't see each other all the time because 2 hours is a long way. So we're hoping that maybe this will foster a little bit more of the cross meetup culture and stuff like that. And maybe we can start sharing some ideas and seeing maybe they have people who are a little closer to us. Maybe they want to send some people out our way. We can talk about different strategies about what's working for them, how things are going. So, and one other thing I didn't mention that I thought would be interesting to bring up on the Connecticut meetup is, so two of the guys who go there, and these are two of the guys, they've been to our meetup a couple times, but they were recently on stage at the Bitcoin conference with Jeff Booth to talk about this like physics paper that they wrote. And it has, you know, they've been getting some feedback, all kinds of feedback. Good feedback, not as good feedback, but it's been a very interesting experience for them personally. And everybody was super excited to just hear how everything went and how the conference was and, you know, what they're doing with the feedback, which they're taking everybody's feedback actually really seriously. This is not something, you know, they're not just kind of trying to bury it or something like that. They're very much embracing the conversation and are looking to have as many conversations about it as they can. So it was cool to give them a little bit of a space to talk with their local people, which are us. So yeah, it was a good time.
There's a couple things that I wanted to mention or just respond to in all that. And the first thing is that these like more hole in the wall, you could say maybe it provides the illusion of privacy a little bit when you kind of got to do some work to get to the meetup venue in the first place, or it's a little uncertain if this is where the meetup actually is. It's bad.
We walked by it twice. We literally walked by it twice. We couldn't see it. We're like, I'm looking at the map. I'm looking at the buildings. I was like, it's like not here. And then I was like, oh, that little door there, that's what it is? Okay.
Yeah, it just makes you feel like, all right, I'm really in the know on something here, some really kind of underground cool thing. For me, I like that. I like feeling like I'm participating in this secret underground culture. And so when the meetup is not just obviously right there, it's cool. And the dinner thing is something that I struggle with too, where a lot of these meetups are in right around dinner time, you know, but if you're driving 2 hours to get there, well, you left way before dinner time. And so you either got to be prepared to pack your dinner or you're buying dinner. Sometimes the meetup doesn't have food, like there's no option there. So this is a challenge for me, even years later, of never quite being prepared with the food the way I should be. And finally, I listened to that episode, the physics stuff on Preston Pitch. Is that the only podcast that they've done so far?
I think so. They had been talking about
it. Really good. I thought, you know, it's not very often after years of listening to podcasts and there's not many completely like mind-blowing new things that come up, you know. And there was some novel ways of thinking about Bitcoin that these guys brought to the table. Whether it's, you know, this is, I think, where the criticism comes in is maybe if you think about it even further, you end up circling back to like, okay, it's not really what they're saying it is, but it's definitely food for thought in a big way. And it's a cool podcast.
It's really, honestly, it's my takeaway on their topic is that they're using Bitcoin to point out limitations in our knowledge of our current time-based universe. And so they're saying, because we understand, like we can view Bitcoin under such a microscope, right? Because we can see the entire thing. It's right here. I run it on my node. I can see everything about this thing. It's all contained right here, which is very much not like our universe, which is enormous and whatever, 13 billion years old or however old it is. The other thing too is that in Bitcoin, time moves by in 10-minute chunks. That's Bitcoin's clock, moves in 10-minute chunks. The universe's clock moves at this scale called like Planck time, which is some ungodly minuscule amount of time that I can't remember, 10 to the negative 30 seconds or something like that. It's a very small number. And so they're basically just saying, hey, because we can view Bitcoin at it's so much easier for us to view it, we can make some interesting parallels between Bitcoin and our own universe. And yeah, you're right. Like some of the physics people are arguing terminology and stuff. Like they don't like, oh, that's not what that word means, or that's not what you think it is, or something like that. But to me, it's mostly just semantics. My takeaway was the same as yours, which is like, wow, this is a totally new way to think about Bitcoin. It's been a while since I read, you know, I don't know, the mycelium of money, or Bitcoin is a pioneer species, or some other big concept that was blowing my mind the first time I read it.
So yeah, it takes the concept that Bitcoin is fundamentally a natural, organic system, a complex system that it's a digital complex system that mirrors nature more closely than anything else. And when you break it down into this, you really drill down into it. These are the first people that really like drilled down into it and kind of created a framework of thinking about it beyond just relating it directly to mushrooms, like mycelium and mushroom systems or pioneer species in nature and everything like that. They're drawing their analogies into actual physics concepts, much more deep concepts, more scientific concepts. So tonight we're going to, or I keep saying tonight, and you know, when you're listening, it's not tonight. It might not be tonight, but this episode, since we don't have a guest, we wanted to just kind of fire off some stuff that we thought was interesting related to Bitcoin meetups. And so I don't know if you want to kick us off into that or.
Well, I was thinking, I guess the first thing to bring up is, so for this episode, you know, most of the time, I guess most of the time we have guests. Rev and I, we both do some preparation. And so we think about what kinds of questions we're going to ask and things like that. Maybe we have a couple topics we want to bring up. But a lot of that happens, you know, it's a conversation. So this episode, we came a little bit more prepared. We had a couple topics written down, and we'd like to kind of go through them, you know, a little bit with a little bit more structure. So it reminded me of when I was listening to the 49th Parallel podcast, because apparently they come prepared with all kinds of lists of notes and topics and things that they can talk about during the episode. They're both viewing it on the screen at the same time. And I don't know. I think it's the engineer in me, that, like the hyper-organized, like the guy who, like, I'm the guy that takes meeting minutes. Like, I type them out as I'm having phone calls with other Bitcoin meetup organizers. Like, that's, yes, I am a psychopath. I understand that. But it's that part of me that is like, dude, we should totally have a whole list of topics so we can talk about them during the episode. So yeah, so here we are. And that's what we did today. So I think the first one, oh, you're on mute.
49th parallel is Boomer, who has been on the show, episode 3, and Business Cat, who does the Rock Paper Bitcoin podcast, and who also is a meetup organizer. I'm failing to remember exactly which meetup he runs. It's in Pennsylvania. I don't remember what they call it. But, you know, those guys have been an inspiration for this recording.
Absolutely. So, looking at the list here, I think the first one we wanted to talk about was your topic. Want to dive into some circular economy stuff?
Yeah, so we talk about circular economies, and as I mentioned at the beginning, the Southwest Michigan meetup is really where the circular economy stuff really started for me. And that's been going on for a long time, to where we have a pretty robust circular economy. And when I say circular economy, I think people can get the idea that, oh, that means that you're living on Bitcoin and you can get everything you could ever want or need with Bitcoin. And obviously, that's not the reality. These are small scale circulations of Bitcoin amongst a tight knit group of people. But because we've been doing it for so long, we're seeing the benefits of keeping the sats moving amongst ourselves. And also, it's led to this idea of how do we improve the products that we're bringing to the table and expand how we can give other Bitcoiners access to this stuff if they can't just get to the meetup. And so the circular economy started off as, you know, me bringing maple syrup and then somebody else saying, well, I've got some pork in my freezer. I could bring that. And another guy's got this and another guy's got that. And we just kind of sell it to each other. But we started getting interested in more value add stuff. So one guy was making, he was growing basil, and he actually grew the basil with compost that he bought from me. And then from the basil that he grew with the compost that he bought from me, then he started turning that into pesto and selling the pesto. And so then it became like, okay, I've got this value added thing that's basil grown from Rev's compost. And here's a piece of bread and you can taste the pesto, and then we buy the pesto. And now it's gotten to the point where the same guy's gotten a freeze dryer, and I've mentioned this on other episodes. And so now we're starting to figure out, like, okay, well, what are these products that we're regularly sharing with each other? How can we utilize the processing of the freeze dryer to enhance, to first of all, make this stuff shelf stable, because a lot of what we're doing is perishable food items. And so if we can value add it and at the same time make it shelf stable, now I can take a load of that, those goods, and bring it to somewhere like Chicago, bring it to Grand Rapids, and expand the offerings of what we're producing here in Southwest Michigan to the broader Bitcoin culture and community that we're involved with, without, once again, without all these people having to come to our meetup. And so what we're kind of getting to, the what's kind of holding things up, is this idea of, it's tricky when you've got the volatility of the price of Bitcoin and you're trying to operate on sats as like your unit of account, so to speak. If I pay for processing of, let's use the example of my purple dead nettle allergy tea. I pay for the processing of the purple dead nettle allergy tea. It cost me 100K sats. So now I've got 100K sats tied up into this, but then I'm actually selling it. I'm trying to price it in dollars because that's what people understand. And as the price changes, I may win on that processing fee, or I may lose big time, depending on how long it takes me to sell that tea. And at that, during that, that from the time it was processed to the time that it was sold, maybe the prices run away from me.
And well, that so that's, that, I feel like that's a little bit of an opposite problem for most people, right? Like most people, I feel like they're denominating their costs in dollars. So you have the interesting, you know, situation where your costs, or at least one of your costs, is being denominated in sats. So like that would make me think this would be a great product for you to price in sats as opposed to dollars. Because I feel like that's the argument that I hear always the other way about, well, why do you price your things in dollars? Well, it's because my costs are denominated in dollars. So have you thought about, for that product specifically, switching it up and pricing it in sats?
Well, once again, it's like, how much do you pay for your allergy medicine, for a month's supply of your allergy medicine, right? And if it's priced in sats, and from the when I actually produced this product, the price of Bitcoin was 100K, let's say, and so I spent $100 in processing, and so I'm gonna include that $100 in processing, the 100K sats in the my expenses of this is how I need to catch my margin here to sell this item. But the price is now 200K when I'm selling it. So that makes it just very fucking expensive allergy medicine if I price it in sats. If the trajectory is correct that we think that the price is going to continue to go up, by pricing your things in sats, the longer you hold the stock, if you're not able to rotate through your stock, you can get trapped with some very expensive stuff. And yes. So that's the trick is trying to, because it doesn't matter whether people believe in Bitcoin or not. They're not going to be willing to give up that purchasing power on something that the trade-off is too high, right? To pay twice as much for allergy medicine when they can just go get a natural remedy for dollars on Etsy that's similar or something, right?
Well, so I don't really know if this is where you wanted to go with this. It very well may not be, because we didn't talk about it. It's not on the list, so to speak. But it kind of makes me think of something that comes up a lot in my meetup, which is what is the reason why you want to spend your Bitcoin in the first place? Because a lot of people don't want to spend their Bitcoin. I am a person, I want to spend my Bitcoin. That's what I want to do. I want to use it as money. But I think that my reason for it, for wanting to use Bitcoin as my money, is different than what other people at my meetup about why they would choose to use it. The tax thing comes up all the time. And, you know, we've talked about that even on this podcast before, about the importance of no KYC sats and stuff like that. But it doesn't have anything to do with that for me. And it's not, you know, because I have all these Bitcoin that I don't know what to do with or something like that. No, it has nothing to do with that. It's just better money. Like everything about the experience of using Bitcoin as money, it's just such a different experience than anything else that I've ever experienced using money. Like if I'm paying someone else in Bitcoin, like it's got like meaning behind it. Like it's me. Like these sats, it's me. Like I spent my time and energy doing what I do best to help humanity. Like that's what I did to generate those sats. And now I'm giving them to you. And that's how much I value them. I value them as much as I value my own time. And I love the experience. It's just such a gratifying exchange that's why I want to be spending my Bitcoin everywhere. But that's like a pretty big mental hurdle. And like, I don't open with that about like why you should want to spend your Bitcoin. So I don't know. I mean, to me, if it was more expensive allergy medicine, like, dude, I just would not care. Like that just wouldn't be a factor for me. I mean, obviously within reason, but like, yeah, if it's a couple bucks more or whatever, but I get to pay someone who made it through that whole cool process that you just outlined, and I get to pay for it in sats, you better believe that I'm going to be paying for that in sats, even if it's a few bucks more than at the store.
Yeah. And so the way I think about it, when you spend Bitcoin, this is how you define that you're in Bitcoin culture. The money that you use defines what culture you're ultimately participating in. If you're spending the dollar, you're participating in the culture of the dollar. If you're spending the euro, you're participating in the culture of the euro. And if you're spending Bitcoin, you're participating in the culture of Bitcoin. And so you're supporting. If you don't spend in Bitcoin, that is it's probably spending Bitcoin is probably the number one way you can support Bitcoin culture. You're spending the Bitcoin with people who want to earn it, and you get the idea. And so that's kind of that's what gets to the so instead of me paying up front this 100K sats for the processing fee, we're trying to figure out how do we both share that risk, you know, of when I sell the T, is there a way for me to have one payment that splits that I get my margin, whatever I wanted to get, and the processor, the freeze drying processing, gets paid for each sale of the T. And so in order for this person to want to work with me, they have to be confident in my ability to actually to sell and utilize that work that they've done. And so it creates a whole different relationship when you can start to use this mechanism. And this is part of the problem is that we don't necessarily know how a very simple way to do this. We've tried in the past where, you know, somebody has just given me products. Sell these when you go to the other meetups and give me my split, give me my cut when you sell it. And then I sell it and I lump it in with another, you know, someone buys eggs and maple syrup and then this other item. And it's one big transaction. And then I have to, and because we're still using dollars as the unit of account at the meetups, because that generally is the way that people think about pricing. I think you put yourself at a disadvantage if you go to a Bitcoin meetup and you're pricing in sats and people have to do the math about how much is this actually costing? Because that's what people do. Then I go try and do the accounting. I'm like, okay, so I sold X number of these items from this other person. What was the price of Bitcoin at the time? What is their split? And it becomes very, very confusing and hard to keep track of, especially if you don't do that accounting right away at the end of each meetup. And so we're trying to figure out a way to, when somebody makes a payment, the appropriate people get paid out proportionally for their work involved in producing that product from that point of payment directly. And this is something that I think is like, as far as the average person just going around with a bag of items and selling it, you could use cash as an example. You cannot do that at a farmer's market style setting, right? I don't even know what mechanism would be an easy way to do that using credit cards or any of the other fintech stuff. But with Bitcoin, there's got to be a way to do it. It's just not totally obvious to us right now. And actually, this is kind of a call out for anyone out there that has any ideas about how you could take physical products and create payment splits on that with a good UX in person, phone to phone, or whatever it may be. We're looking for a way to make this happen because it's going to unlock a lot of cool potential ways for goods and services to cooperate in this circular economy that we're developing. And so that's kind of the end of my spiel on that.
Well, so I wanted to bring up, so there was this concept that was floating around, at least it was floating around the Nostr space a couple of years ago. I think it was a couple of years ago. Prism payments. And you and I have talked a little bit about these before, but neither one of us really know very much about it. I before this episode, I read one short article that Gigi wrote about it. And at the time, and again, this is, if you're talking about a newish topic from 2 years ago in the Nostr space, that is like so unbelievably ancient history at this point that there's probably like 10 apps out there that have totally redefined this whole thing, and I just haven't heard of them yet. So forgive me ahead of time that I'm probably way out of date on this topic, but as I understand Prism payments, it kind of just sounded to me like it was somebody's server. Like one person would get all of the sats from the payee. That way it's one, like when we do all these Zap splits and stuff like that, like on our website and through Podcasting 2.0, those are all separate invoices. Like each payment leg requires its own invoice. And so you're actually, if you're splitting a payment five ways, you're actually just making five payments. So Prism Payments would simplify that to be one payment, but then from there it splits out. So is there a way, now if you're going to do it that way, that requires some trust of whoever is controlling this server, that they're going to do everything correctly and that the splits are all going to happen the way you want them to and things like that. Is there a way to do it trustlessly? Which, of course, we would prefer in Bitcoin. I have no idea. But it is a great, it's the fact that we have programmable money means that solutions like this can be thought of. If you can dream it, you can build it. And eventually someone will build it. I just have no idea if we've gotten there yet.
Well, in that instance, it's the person is already trusting me, right? They've already said, I processed your product, I've given it to you, and I'm expecting repayment. And so if the payment comes to me first and then automatically goes out to the respective people, that's fine because they're already trusting me. The reason why we wouldn't use Prism Payments for something like the splits that we're doing on the show is because we don't want the guests to trust that we're going to do the correct accounting. It just automatically happens. And so there's a good reason for both of these things. And in this instance, something like the Prism Payments sounds like a good solution. It's just the question is then where is the UX? Where is the thing with the good Prism Payment UX? Does that exist? And we haven't found it. And we're looking for that.
It almost kind of makes me I know we've been talking about this for a while, but I don't know if you've ever used Bolt, like for swaps. Doesn't it seem like a service that Bolt could offer where you could set something up? Like they already allow you to like back up your kind of, I forget exactly what they call it, but you can like back up some instance that helps you identify, like if a payment fails or something like that, like you have some sort of an identifier for yourself. I wonder if there's a way that they could set up, you know, I'm just saying like people already trust them to do these swaps. Maybe they have a good enough reputation at this point to be able to be trusted to do these Prism Payments, and they could come up with a cool UX or something. I don't know.
There you go. Bolts, if you're listening, there's three people out there that want to use Prism Payments, and you should totally vibe code that up. No, it's just like, that's the problem, right? Is that what we're doing is at the frontier, and there's not a lot of instances of people actually trying to experiment and do these proof of concept ways of using Bitcoin at the next level beyond just like Alice paying Bob. You know, there's so much more that we can do, but because most people are not interacting in the Bitcoin culture exclusively, it just doesn't come up. And so it's coming up now. We've been doing this for years, and it's like, man, the solution to these accounting problems is right here. It's Bitcoin, but we don't quite have the technical chops to be able to do it. And mentioning vibe coding, when you start vibe coding with money, talking about bugs and all this stuff, it's like, it gets to be a little bit of a scary thing to do. But certainly this is a cool thing that it's already happening with Zap splits and everything like that. And the Prism Payments was a thing on Nostr for a while, like where there were certain conditions that would unlock the Prism and then everyone would get paid out. The sats would be held, I don't know if you'd say in escrow, but like
there was it actually implemented somewhere?
Yeah. There was, I think the dude who was really using it was on the West Coast. I could be wrong saying that it was the San Francisco Bay Area, and he was at the first Nostrville, and I'm ashamed that I cannot remember his name, because if I could, then I would actually go and find him and ask him these questions directly. But if you're out there and you've done this work with Prism Payments, get a hold of me, because I do want to dig deeper into this. But maybe this is a good chance to move into the next thing. I think we've talked about this enough. We're kind of talking in circles here, but
all right. So if we're going to move to the next topic, I guess my suggestion would be, I wanted to talk a little bit about meetups when it comes to proof of work. And really what I mean by proof of work in this particular case is that it's really less about actual proof of work and more about proof of reputation. This is something, you know, reputation in Bitcoin culture is something that is extremely important. All Bitcoiners take reputation extremely seriously, and it's something that you can lose instantaneously. This is why, like, in how many, you know, whatever, Bitcoin celebrity type people, you know, these people, like, the, it's like a kill your heroes situation. Like, so many that people, you know, we trusted you, we looked up to you, we gave you tons of glaze, and then you went and started shilling XRP, you know, or some other ridiculous nonsense that no one is getting behind, and your credibility is instantly lost. And so in the Bitcoin culture, in the Bitcoin community, especially when you start getting into the IRL spaces, like the real life, the meet space, meetups and conferences and stuff like that, it's all about when you meet another pleb, pioneer, so to speak, another average Bitcoiner. That's, you know, we all have this shared common understanding of Bitcoin. We all have this shared background and knowledge. We come into these spaces and we all kind of feel like family. And we all want to know, like, what is the cool shit that you have going on? Because especially once you start getting into the meetup scene, seems like such a high percent of people have such cool shit going on. Everybody's building something. Everybody's doing something. Everyone's exploring some unexplored territory. And we all just kind of want to know what everybody else has going on. And Bitcoin meetups if you are one of those people, if you are one of those builders, pioneers, explorers, Bitcoin meetups is like such a perfect place for you. Like, let's say you don't have this big following on the internet. Maybe you're just not a social media person. That's totally fine. Totally understandable, in fact. Bitcoin meetups is a great place for you to come and talk about all the cool shit that you're doing. And if you're not one of those people, if you're just like a normal guy who or gal or someone who's just interested in Bitcoin and wants to learn more, if you end up going to your local meetup, you are going to get to meet some of these really cool people who have all kinds of really cool stuff going on. And you're going to be able to start building a personal relationship with them. And, you know, maybe you could contribute to their idea. Maybe you could be a beta tester for their products. Maybe you could help them out in some way. You know, maybe they could help you out back. This is what this whole ecosystem is all about. Like, if you're going to help me out, if you're going to find bugs on my website, well, I'm going to reward you with sats. Or with, you know, some other thing that I have to offer you or some other form of capital, right? I'm going to shout you out and make sure that you start building up that social capital. I don't know. I just feel like there's lots of opportunities to commingle, like, in the IRL Bitcoin space, specifically at meetups. It's because there's such high signal events. They draw in such high signal people. It's just a really great place for all those things to kind of come together.
Everybody's got the ability to find their niche and how they can participate and be known for that. And eventually that can yield, maybe it can yield Bitcoin. But as we talk about, there's other forms of capital that it can yield. And just by participating and building that reputation over time, there's definitely something to be gained from it. And everybody wins when this is the way it goes. There's a point on there that I wanted to mention. But you don't have to be the person with the product, with the new idea. You can be the person being the sounding board, being the beta tester, being the person to consume the product and give feedback on it. And everybody, you know, help everybody succeed.
even just listening to someone explain their idea. Because a lot of people, especially if they're working on something new, it takes a while to find the right words. Like, it takes a while to explain it in the right way for the light bulb to go off and for people to realize what it is that you're doing. And so when you come in cold, not understanding anything about what someone's working on, and they just get to explain it to you, that's valuable feedback. Whatever your reaction is going to be valuable, whether you get it right away or you don't get it right away. Either one of those is still valuable because it's actual real life feedback.
And there is a grapevine involved with the meetups where it's not just, meetups are not isolated in themselves. There are people that I span a whole region of different meetups. And so I know people from all across the region. And if I meet you at one meetup in Chicago, let's say, and then I'm in Grand Rapids and some relevant connection opportunity comes up, I'd say, hey, I know a guy in Chicago. You should connect. And so by putting yourself in this mix, you're actually exposing yourself to a much broader local community. Different, very different than putting yourself out there on the internet. And once again, the reputation plays a huge role in here in this aspect, because I'm not just going to vouch for any, I probably won't bring it up if I just met the dude and I have no idea what they're, you know, if it's somebody that I'm seeing them work on this thing forever and I'm like, oh yeah, that's really cool. And then I see over here, somebody else is working on something forever and it's really cool. And if I link these two people together, then they can even do better. That's the idea, is that this reputation is important. It will afford you the access to, by going to the meetup, by coming to the meetup, you may find connections outside of just that one little group of 10 or 15 people. These meetups are overlapping, and they're overlapping more and more so as time goes on.
So that brings up a good, I think I might, I there was a, there's another concept that I'm trying to explore a little bit. And this falls into the category of things that I haven't really found the right words of. What is the point I'm trying to make yet? I'm still trying to work on that specifically. But part of it is definitely what you just brought up, which is that meetups are not just a singular occurrence. Is that a lot of meetups, now, okay, fine. I'm sure there are some meetups out there who are extremely isolated. I'm sure that's a thing. But a lot of meetups, there are people who go between meetups. You'll get visitors who are coming from outside who like see, you know, their regular meetup attendees and they're just looking, hey, I happen to be in your area and I'm just going to stop by your meetup. And now they're going to know everyone at that meetup. So we've talked on this show a lot about kind of the progression of meetups where, sure, you started out, whatever, maybe you posted on meetup.com, one or two people show up. Okay, there you go. Meetup or, you know, origin point started. But as it grows, the community grows around it. And then all of a sudden, now you're doing more stuff with the meetup. Maybe now you got a circular economy or you're doing Bitcoin education stuff. But really, at the same time, you're growing outwardly. Maybe there's regional events in your area. Maybe you throw a regional event, like a Lake Satoshi or a Nakamo Town or Bitcoin is for Everyone. You know, we've heard about a lot of these regional events, the Sound Money Soiree. It seems like there's a lot of these, like, quote unquote, bigger events that are supposed to draw in these larger communities, where meetups, a lot of times, these are just people who go to the local meetups who are all going to the same event. And so you can see now how those networks start to grow. And now there's like these even bigger layers that are starting. There's like the Meshdadel, right? How many meetups are represented in the Meshdadel? There's Grassroots Bitcoin. How many different meetup organizers go to Grassroots Bitcoin? There's this podcast, right? Now we're starting, we've already had, what, 8 or 9 guests on this podcast from all different meetups. So there's this other layer that's happening that's bringing together all of these communities. And we're talking about the regional events. So all you get access to this entire network just by going to your local meetup. Now you're going to start gaining exposure to this whole in-person network that, you know, we use Bitcoin as our money. We use Nostr. We use RSS. We use the tools for communication. But, you know, we're all connected together.
It is very much a backwards way of developing a community where these small isolated communities start and eventually find connection points to other small isolated communities. That leads to those communities getting together in a regional event, which then leads to people that maybe are completely from outside that community altogether coming to the regional event and connecting those together. And if you're not going to the Bitcoin meetups, you're not, you know, you don't have access to this. You know, it's a different, it becomes, like I said, the territories of each meetup start to encroach each other and overlap. And once they start to overlap, that's where the connection makes, where now the economy can be bridged between them. And once again, the economy doesn't have to be in sats. The economy can be of all these forms of capital. The exchange of the capital can happen. And it's a much, going back to episode two, you know, the Bitcoin meetups are the true trust. Like that's where the trust happens. Because it's so small, it starts off small. You have the ability to build your reputation amongst these people. And once these communities start to overlap, everyone's kind of been vetted to some degree. You know, I don't want people to like get the idea that this actually gets into the next concept, the next kind of topic of not being afraid to attend the meetups in the first place. It's not to say that every single person is vetted, but there are people that build up this reputation where you can vouch for them, you know, and these people that are vouched for can overlap and connect and continue to actually develop the culture to the point where all these different regions are finally overlapping across the whole country, across the whole world. It's a slow process, but it's decentralized and it's very hard to stop. And by coming to the meetup, you're participating in that.
Yeah. And I think a lot of this, like Bitcoin meetups have been around for a long time, but maybe not at the scale that we have today. And I feel like some of the scale that we have today has come from some of these higher level coordination mechanisms. Like I think I've said it on this podcast before, or if I haven't, I've said it in many different contexts. The fact that all these Bitcoin meetups are decentralized, like that is the way that they're supposed to be. However, just because we're decentralized doesn't mean that we should be disorganized. Like what we're trying to do on this podcast and what other events like Grassroots Bitcoin, for example, are trying to do is we're trying to help each other out. Like there's no reason why we all need to be reinventing the wheel every single time we run an educational meetup. Whatever educational meetup you've run, someone else has probably run a very similar educational meetup. Why wouldn't we want to share tools with each other? You know, so there are ways for us to learn from each other, to communicate with one another, to just hear what other people are working on. Even if you just hear the message about what someone else is doing, even if you don't do that exact same thing, it's going to make you think of something that you want to do with your meetup. Even if you're not a Bitcoin meetup organizer, bring it up with your organizer. Hey, I'm hearing about all these circular economies going on at all these meetups. Like, how come we don't have one of those? You know, can I start bringing stuff to the meetup to sell for sats? Because the answer is almost certainly going to be yes. So I just think that there's a lot that we can learn from each other. And that is definitely one of the big drivers for why we started this podcast in the first place. I think I said on, maybe it was just the last episode, like this was very much inspired by me attending Grassroots Bitcoin and getting to know all these other meetup organizers. I was like, oh my God, there's so many different stories out there like I would, let's see if we can find a way to give everybody a platform to really talk and share about what they got going on.
Well, and this is the definition of cultural capital. It's the collective intellectual capital and experiential capital of a group. And so when we are able to create overlaps in this knowledge and this experience, that means it becomes that much easier. Now that that creates the bar, it sets the bar. And so when you come in, you don't have to necessarily start from zero. You start at the high watermark that we're at, because all this information is out there and there's people to assist and guide and help facilitate your meetup kicking ass and doing what it's going to do. Now, this kind of gets into the idea also of, so there's so many different meetups and they're all small, and then they kind of overlap into these regional things and so on and so forth. But I was kind of jokingly when we were talking saying, you know, this maybe there's like a Dunbar's number of the size of a Bitcoin meetup, and it could be somewhere between 10 and 20 people. And a lot, so as I've seen people share with me, you know, they try and expand this idea of going to Bitcoin meetups outside of just Noster into places like Reddit or whatever. And the comments on Reddit are like, well, yeah, go to the Bitcoin meetup, great place to, you know, get wrench attacked. And they see this as a threat. Going to the meetup is like, why would you put yourself in a position of danger for what gain? And I think what they're missing is that there's, you know, 10 or 20 people, which if you go to the meetup and you don't have to tell everyone everything about yourself the first time, you don't even have to tell anyone your name, your real name, whatever. You can introduce yourself as whoever the fuck you want. And over time, you develop trust and you start to open up to these people. But you're really not putting yourself at risk. What you're doing is you're instead of, by not going to the meetup, you're losing all of the potential of earning sats, the potential of gaining access to a product that is way higher quality and produced by somebody you know, versus going to the grocery store and getting it from Argentina or China or Mexico or wherever, you know. And the what you have to gain from attending one of these small meetups is much higher than what you have to risk, especially if you're thoughtful about how you go to these meetups. We talked about like Jameson Lopes, his wrench attack.
He's got
a repo track
on
of it. Yeah, a repo of all these wrench attacks that happen. And if you really dig into it, it's people that are just being careless and stupid. And a lot of times it's people that aren't just Bitcoin only. They're fucking around with crypto and all this other stuff too. And
well, I can weigh in on that too. So I took this stuff pretty seriously, actually, when I first decided to run the Bitcoin meetup. I was like, before I hold the first one, I would like to do some thinking about OPSEC and about what I want to do. And that was kind of, it was one of my many Bitcoin rabbit holes, but it was a rabbit hole I wanted to go down. And that was when I had found Jameson Lopes stuff at that point. But it wasn't until a couple of years later. Actually, I was just looking because I pulled up the slides because I wanted to see what I ran a meetup topic on this. I called it. It was right after I took a firearms safety course. And the firearms safety course was so awesome. Like I learned all kinds of cool stuff. Like I wasn't historically like a huge gun person, but again, like as when I start going down this OPSEC rabbit hole, things like firearm safety courses all of a sudden come into my world. And so seeing how cool that was, I thought, hey, it'd be cool if we had a firearm safety course, but for Bitcoin. And so I called it Self-Custody Security Fundamentals. That was a meetup topic, presentation topic. It's actually one of the few topics that I actually went to the other meetups in the area. Like I went out to Boston, I went to Albany and gave the same presentation because it got such good feedback. But one of the things I did for that was at the time, and this was 2 years ago, so I know a lot has changed in 2 years, but so I read through like all, at the time it was 167 examples of physical attacks that were tracked by Jameson Lopp and started like categorizing them. First of all, none of them occurred at a Bitcoin meetup. Just saying. Some of them were stupid. Some of them were not stupid. You know, some of them were tragic. There are some, you know, certainly I don't think any Bitcoiner would ever want to be in those types of circumstances. But like you were saying, a lot of times there are things that you can do to keep yourself out of a lot of these messes. Like, how do you make yourself, how do you not make yourself a target in the first place? If you think going to a Bitcoin meetup is going to make you a target, like, that is not what these people are looking for. Like, they're looking to find out, are you like a high net worth individual? Like, are you online flexing your stack and then going to a Bitcoin meetup? Because that would be a bad idea. And the going to the Bitcoin meetup part isn't the bad part of the idea. It's the flexing your stack online or even in person. Like, why would you ever go around talking about stuff like that? And so, yeah, so we walked through a bunch of just like very practical, easy things that you can do that will keep you much, much safer than you would otherwise think.
So do you want to go over some of that stuff? I think it's useful to hear.
Sure. Yeah, so I'll dive in. Yeah, if we're talking about OPSEC, so one of the things I wanted to mention, just if you're looking for good practices, we've talked about it on this show before. It's in the show notes of every show. I put together a GitHub repo where we have good practices for Bitcoin meetup organizers. How do you start your meetup? How do you grow your meetup? How do you advertise your meetup? How do you do the social media thing with your meetup? How do you find new venues? Like, we have tips and tricks and lessons learned and things like that that we've accumulated from this show, also from talking with other meetup organizers outside of the show, from our own experiences, from my own experience. I'm sure there's lots that we could add. We have community tips. If anybody has a community tip, you can submit it as an issue and we'll add it to the GitHub repo. But one of the sections I have is called Disclaimers and Risks. And this is where we talk about OPSEC. So one of the things I bring up right there on the page is that, you know, one of the things that makes it so easy to keep Bitcoin secure is that it's not physical. Right? So you can apply things like encryption to it. It's a non-physical object. So it's actually much, much, much easier to keep things like that safe. But you, me, I, we are physical assets. Like, we must be kept safe with things that are not encryption. Like, we're operating in meat space. And so it's important that you think about this kind of stuff. Like, it's fine that the Reddit people want to point out this risk. I have no problem with them bringing it up. They're just missing, they're over-exaggerating the actual probability of something happening. And they're totally missing like all the benefits that you gain from coming to a Bitcoin meetup. So they're swinging and missing on both those counts. But there's no harm at all. In fact, you should be thinking about security when you go to a meetup or when you go anywhere. This doesn't have to do with only Bitcoin meetups. Like I said, when I went through Jameson Lopp's list, none of them were at Bitcoin meetups. They were all out somewhere else in the real world. And every single one of those people on Reddit, they all operate in the real world. All of them do. Maybe not at a Bitcoin meetup, but they're all somewhere. So some of the things, here are some of the operational security good practices for Bitcoin meetup organizers. Don't use your full first and last name. I feel like that's, you don't have to. I'm not saying that there's a big problem with that, but if you do, it's not the end of the world either. But hey, if you're going to start your meetup and this is something you're concerned about, I don't know, consider just using your first name. I don't
start a meetup, attend a meetup, right? You don't have to tell everyone who you are. Totally fine. You know, that's part of the culture. It's actually completely acceptable to go by a name.
Absolutely.
Right? It's almost cooler in some ways. I know people and I know their first name. And I call them by their NIM because that's who they are to me.
In fact, it usually throws me off when people call you Carl. We've had a couple people on this podcast call you Carl. And I'm like, what? You will be Rev to me. Do not post or otherwise share your home address with anyone you don't trust. Maybe these things are obvious, but if you're a new meetup organizer and you think, hey, I'm having a campfire at my house this weekend, I'll just put it on meetup.com. Maybe not. Maybe use a different communication channel to get that one out there.
And to that point, a little bit with the Nostr goods and services sales and everything, a P.O. box is very cheap, generally, and it's a way to put a return on address on the things that you're sending out to people where they don't get your home address, right? So having a P.O. box is valuable in that regard.
Yeah, I have a thing that I use. It's like an iPostal. I don't know if you've heard of that. I like go pick up my packages at Staples. If I'm concerned about my address being leaked, I'll use that. Do not bring large quantities of Bitcoin or cash to a meetup. Again, if you're concerned about a wrench attack, don't walk around with like thousands of dollars in cash or in Bitcoin. And so when I say don't carry it around in Bitcoin, I mean, don't have access to it on your phone. Like, don't be able to, I don't know, have a mobile wallet with your seed phrase in it, even if it's password protected or whatever. I don't see a big reason to have to walk around with access to that much capital. Yeah, whatever. However much however much maybe you'd keep in your wallet. Like, there's no problem walking around with
money.
How
many dollars would you keep in your wallet walking around with? Maybe that's a similar number, what you'd keep on your phone hot at the Bitcoin meetup.
But that, you know what else that applies to as well? Bitcoin exchanges. For all the people out there who are still keeping their sats on an exchange, especially if you have a large number of sats on an exchange, it means you're one password away from that Bitcoin, which is not very far. And so, again, if this is something that you're concerned about, maybe don't keep your Bitcoin on an exchange. Maybe withdraw them to self-custody and keep them somewhere offline and private where you can't have access to them at your Bitcoin meetup.
Or, you know, if you've got the apps on your phone, right, just find a way to obfuscate the fact that these apps are there. Because if someone does corner you in the parking lot on the way, you know, on the way out of the meetup or something, like, give me your phone, like, open up your Coinbase account. I want to see what's in there. Maybe just, like, don't have that be accessible.
And then some of the other stuff is just, like, you know, just pay attention. You know, if there's the new guy who shows up, you know, go engage him or her. Go talk to them and find out what they're all about. Get a vibe check. You know, there's something to just being able to look somebody in the eye. You can kind of tell a lot about a person. Most people, anyway. If you just go and look them in the eye, you know, have a real conversation with them. Find out, is there something off or out of place about this person? And then, I don't know, just pay attention. I remember hearing at one of the times I gave this presentation, I heard a story that this is, you know, Bitcoin meetups, we're not the only community that has to worry about this kind of stuff. One of the big ones that I heard about was like poker players, people who go around, you know, they'll find these like cash games and, you know, you might walk out of there with like 10 grand. There are people who will hang out outside of those places or inside and pay attention to who's got the big winnings. And maybe follow them out to their car. Like, to me, that sounds like a much more dangerous environment than a Bitcoin meetup. And, you know, I don't know if people on Reddit are talking about wrench attacks in that community, but it seems to me like that would be a much bigger honeypot for that kind of activity than a Bitcoin meetup. So the other stuff on here too, and this came up during the Jersey City episode. I think it came up in another episode as well. This isn't really an IRL concern. It's more just about being aware of like your Telegram or your Signal groups or your chat groups. There are people out there who will impersonate meetup organizers, especially like if you're the leader of the group, it's going to be more likely that you get impersonated. It's happened to me. And if it's happened to me with my relatively small meetup, and this was years ago when we had kind of first started, it still happened to me. It's going to happen to you too, most likely. So just make sure that everybody knows that. Try to be selective about who you allow into your groups in the first place. You know, maybe you have to meet them in real life before you'll even let them into the group. Like, maybe don't advertise your chat group anywhere. Just keep that private and you have to come to the meetup to get it. So those
are... I do have a story related to that.
Yeah, let's hear it.
So I was kind of new... I was basically only attending the Southwest Michigan meetup. And I was thinking, all right, this meetup is sweet. I want to go check out another one. And I was kind of clouded with the illusion of this trust because I had been attending that meetup for several months and I knew everyone and we felt like family, right, already. And so I go to the Grand Rapids meetup for the first time. And I was a little loose on how loud I was talking about what I was doing. And somebody was listening to what I was saying. And they got information that you would only know if you went to this meetup. And then they impersonated me on Telegram in the Grand Rapids, Michigan chat and was communicating with another person that I was at the meetup with and trying to get Bitcoin out of them. Now, this person was smart enough to, I had a different connection, and they were like saying, hey, are we talking on Telegram right now? And I said, no. And all of a sudden, it became clear that they were talking to somebody who was not me. But the point is that you do have to be considerate, especially when you're showing up to the meetup for the first time and you don't know anyone. You know, just hold your cards a little closer to the chest. The vibes might be riding high and you're feeling good and you feel like you can open up, but it's worth considering what you're talking about and how you're saying it. And once again, this is not to scare anyone from attending the meetup. The whole point here is just because when you attend the meetup, you're going to get so much out of it. These are edge case scenarios that we're talking about being considerate of. And all you have to do is a little bit of thought before the meetup and just prepare yourself and you will never have a problem, right? Very, very unlikely that you will have a problem. But yeah, be thoughtful when you go to a new meetup for the first time and you're talking to people you know or whatever. Other people can be listening to that shit and you don't know what they're going to use with that information they're overhearing.
So yeah, maybe just to round out this topic, I'm glad that we spent some time talking about this because it's really the only mildly valid criticism, I feel like, of Bitcoin meetups. When you get this feedback from someone, especially someone who's very privacy focused, they bring up the OPSEC concern, the $5 wrench attack concern. We're not saying that these are bad things to think about. These are very good things to think about. Rev and I did a Twitter Spaces this past week with the Bitcoin Veterans guys. And they asked me a little bit about my background, which I haven't really talked too much about on this particular podcast. But very much so, my day-to-day life has everything to do with probability and consequence. That like is my career. And so when you start thinking about what it is we're talking about here, what is the probability of this actually happening? And the probability is relatively low. And then you have to think about what is the consequence. So, because a low probability event with a very high consequence, you know, that can be something you still need to take seriously. And so there's there are degrees of things that could happen as a consequence. But, you know, in the worst case, the consequence could be extremely high, which is why it is incredibly important that you do think about this kind of stuff. But you have to remember that you're taking risks every day of your life. Every time you sit behind the wheel of your car and drive, you know, 70 miles an hour on the highway, you don't have control over all of the vehicles around you. Like, you are taking huge risks. And a lot of times your children will be in the back seat. Like, these people take risks all the time. And the question is, are the risks worth, are there benefits out there that justify the risks?
And are you going to go to the grocery store or are you going to just, you know, pay the premium to have everything delivered to your house, right? The convenience and the benefit that you gain from taking the risk of getting on the road is worth way more than the potential of getting into an accident, right? It's just, that's why people do it every day, you know, just. That's the way you got to do it. It makes no sense to just stay at home all the time.
That's right.
So come to the Bitcoin meetup. There's it's really be all right.
It's going to be all right. And you're going to get access to this whole network of Bitcoin meetups, but that comes with some really cool benefits and payoff structures for you personally and potentially for your family, potentially for your legacy. Going to a Bitcoin meetup could be the difference for you.
I think that's a good segue into, I think this is the final topic, my third topic here. And that is selling Bitcoin for cash at a meetup. How do you do that in a way that is safe and good? Now, I've been doing this for years. And I've got kind of, you know, there's a lot of ways to do this. I'm just going to disclose how I do it. And, you know, if there's a better way, great. You know, if there's, you know, it's only, there is no the way. There's only ways with trade-offs, right? But I'm going to talk about how I do it. And I think that a lot of people can learn something from the way that I do it. Because I sell Bitcoin at the meetups for cash. That's how I get fiat. I don't sell Bitcoin on the exchange. I sell Bitcoin at the meetups. I sell Bitcoin into my local Bitcoin economy. And so what I've arrived at in how to do this is, first of all, you talk about you don't want to go to a Bitcoin meetup with a lot of Bitcoin on your phone or whatever. And so how do you sell Bitcoin at a Bitcoin meetup without showing up at the meetup with a lot of Bitcoin on your phone? Well, what I do is I work out, I basically say, hey, in the group chats or however, whatever communication way I have outside of the meetup, I say, hey, I've got some Bitcoin for sale. Does anyone want it? And people will raise their hand, you know, they'll hit me up and we'll work out the terms and conditions. All right, we're going to lock in the price at this time leading up to the meetup, and we're going to do the deal at the meetup. And so by locking in the price in advance of the meetup and getting the address that you're going to pay out to, this allows you to actually make the Bitcoin transaction, completely sign it and everything, but don't broadcast it. I've got the person's address, their Bitcoin address that I'm going to pay to. I draft the transaction in Sparrow. I sign it and I don't broadcast it. I just copy and paste that transaction, that signed transaction, and I save it somewhere. And so that way, when I go to the meetup, the only thing that you can get from me is the signed transaction, which if you broadcast that transaction, it just goes to the person it was supposed to be paid to anyways. So I'm not actually showing up to the meetup with any Bitcoin. I'm just showing up with a signed transaction. And so when I get to the meetup and I see the cash and I see that the person's good for it, then I broadcast the transaction through something like mempool.space has a transaction broadcast functionality. And so how I confirm, because I'm not going to be able to see my, now there's ways that you can do it with watch wallets and all that stuff, but I don't have that. And I also, this gets into the UTXO management component of using on-chain Bitcoin. But what I do is I never send Bitcoin with a change output that comes back to me. The way I accomplish this is we'll use 100K sats to keep things simple. If I'm going to send, if I've got a UTXO that's 120K sats and I need to send 100K sats to somebody at the meetup, well, when I draft that transaction, instead of having that 20K sats come back to a change output, I actually add a secondary output of 20K sats to a wallet, which I can swap into Lightning. So now when I make the transaction at the meetup, I see that this wallet that I have on my phone that can swap into Lightning for that change, it confirms that the transaction was broadcast. And so I can watch for the confirmation at the meetup versus having to be at home at my computer and watching my Sparrow wallet or whatever. And so now I get two things, right? I get to verify that the transaction was confirmed throughout the course of the meetup. And now once the transaction, that change output is confirmed in this swap wallet, I immediately swap it into Lightning and I consolidate all my change in Lightning. So I don't have to deal with any, the person that I'm transacting with, their visibility into this Bitcoin stops right there. They see that 20K sat change output go from this address into some mystical lightning land, right? They cannot follow it. As far as I'm concerned, it's not attached to me anymore. It's now in lightning. And once I get a big enough balance on my lightning channels to 500K, a million sats, whatever, then I just make a swap back out on chain and I keep that in my cold storage. And so I'm consolidating all my change on lightning. Now there's other instances in which.
Can I ask you a couple of questions about that flow?
Yeah.
Do you mind?
Yeah.
That was really cool. I didn't realize you did any of that. That's a really actually smart way to do it. Very smart. So I didn't realize, if you sign the transaction in Sparrow, there's a place where you can paste that output into mempool.space and you just do that on your phone?
Yeah, you just copy and paste it. Whatever Sparrow says, there's like a whole string, this is the Bitcoin transaction. Do you want me to broadcast it? You can click broadcast. I never click broadcast. I just copy and paste that whole thing and put it into an email to myself or whatever.
Yeah.
A note.
Yeah.
When it comes to actually broadcasting, you just copy and paste that and pick your transaction broadcast tool. And this is also very, if you're no-noding it, right? Or if you don't want people to see that you're broadcasting transactions from your node, now it just is a random Bitcoin transaction that gets broadcast from mempool.space. Sure. So it's also better for your privacy in that regard in some ways. Now, I'm sure people can find edge cases where it's bad, but regardless, you know, it's what I'm trying to seek privacy from is the person I'm transacting with at the meetup. This is my main concern. I do not want them to see visibility into my stack. And so, and the other side of that coin is if I have, let's say I don't have a UTXO that's large enough. And so I will pay them that full UTXO on chain. And then at the meetup, I will give them the difference on Lightning. Because usually it's like $20 or something that I'm short. So every time I'm sending one UTXO to the recipient so that they only get visibility into that history of that UTXO. I'm never combining linking UTXOs together. And you can use Lightning in tandem with this to achieve that, right? So now I'm going to send you 100K sats, or let's say it's 80K. I have an 80K sat UTXO. I send them 80K sats, and then I send them 20K on Lightning. And they get their full 100K, but it's just through two different mechanisms. And because also, if you're going to a Bitcoin meetup, most of the time, very, very seldomly does somebody not have the ability to accept a Lightning payment in addition. And so you can use Lightning to, and also this also works the other way, right? If I only have 120K sat UTXO, I could send them the whole thing and then they can pay me the difference on Lightning. If I've got a good relationship with somebody and I know that they're going to have that liquidity on their Lightning channel, I can skip the whole swapping into Lightning change output. I just send them the full 120K and I get my 20K sats change from them on Lightning. And so these are all go ahead.
Sorry. So since we're talking about your specific setup here, I was going to ask too about what tools you use to swap to Lightning. Like I've done all kinds of different, I've swapped between on-chain and Lightning and I think all the different ways, as many as I could find. So I was just curious which one, like you could use Moon, you could use Phoenix, you could use Bolts. Like what's your swap mechanism?
I use Moon Wallet. And now Moon Wallet is really annoying because when you're using Moon Wallet, there's no coin control in Moon Wallet. So my Moon Wallet is always empty. And when I receive a payment into Moon Wallet, I immediately swap it to Lightning. Now, the problem with that is that you have to kind of guess until you get the fees right in order to drain the wallet completely. Yes. You don't want to leave one sat left in there to now have that one sat UTXO or whatever linked with the next one that comes in there. And so Moon I would not honestly recommend people use Moon for this purpose. Now, there's all kinds of other wallets. And actually, Blitz Wallet is one that is going to come up later in the boosts. But Blitz Wallet is one that you can use. You can use Aqua Wallet and swap into, what's that?
Yep.
Sidechain.
Liquid.
Yeah, Liquid.
And they use Bolt.
And so, but Bolt, the only limitation of Bolt is that I think there's like a 20K or 25K sat minimum for Bolt.
There might be.
And so it doesn't quite, sometimes it doesn't quite hit the threshold for the change amounts. Like you could end up with some smaller change than that, that you want to keep, but deal with.
So I would, my shill for this, if we're shilling products or mechanisms to switch between on-chain and Lightning, I've come accustomed to using Phoenix. So I use Phoenix. That's kind of like my mobile carrying around Lightning wallet of choice. Like there's lots of different choices you could choose. It's really, honestly, I use my full Lightning node. Like I use my node as my, like that's how I normally pay in Lightning. But if I need a backup, like if my node is offline or something's not working right, I like to have a backup. And so my backup is Phoenix. Well, Phoenix has this cool thing where you can, if you receive sats on chain, they give you an on-chain address. And if you receive sats to that, they automatically splice it into your Lightning channel. And so then it's a single payment gets it from on-chain directly into Lightning. And it's pretty, like, I don't know. Like I said, I've kind of tried a whole bunch of different mechanisms for it. And it just seems to be the one that's the smoothest and the cleanest. And it's a pet peeve of mine having to do a second on-chain transaction. Like I always try to want to do it in, if I can do it in one on-chain transaction, like that's what I want to do. And so Phoenix, you know, again, if you're already using Phoenix, it gets you there kind of in one step.
I don't know. I've thought about using Phoenix like that with just splicing into my existing channels with my change. But because it's one address, I think you're still linking all of those UTXOs together.
Is it one address though?
I don't know.
I think it changes. I think after you use one, it gives you a new address.
So that might be an interesting mechanism. I've personally been trying to get away from Phoenix Wallet because they do offer a good service and their wallet works and the channels. I've had channels open, big channels with Phoenix for a long time. Never closed, you know, very consistent, never had any problems with the wallet, but their fees are a lot
higher. Their fees are definitely higher.
Than many of the other choices. And so I've been trying to switch to Zeus, and I've heard that, you know, Zeus, if you're not active enough, their LSP might close your channels and stuff. And this is because I'm, once again, no-noding it on the Lightning side of things. But regardless, yeah, whatever swap wallet you use, this is the flow. Like you just don't want to ever have a change output that you're going to have to consolidate on chain. You want to consolidate your change on Lightning.
Right. I agree.
That's the key. Like just consolidate your change on Lightning, and then there will be no trail for the person you're transacting with to follow. It gets broken. Once it gets into Lightning, they can't see where those sats are going anymore. They can't follow it.
This might be a good use case too. And I think we've spent quite a bit of time on this topic already, but, and I don't know if we're ready to start a whole new conversation, but for this use case in particular, this might be a good one for Fedimint, because Fedi is on chain to eCash. Like that's the flow. And so you could just get eCash out the other side. And now that they have the gateways and stuff, the Lightning gateways, I think that's what they're called. Once you get it into the Fedi, once you have Fedi Mint eCash or whatever it's called, you can now swap that to Lightning. And so that could be a flow as well. Now, I haven't really played around with that one too much yet, but it's on my to-do list, is to try to do something more with Fedi Mint, specifically for the purpose of swapping. Like just as a swap service alone, Fedi Mint could be a very interesting idea.
Yeah, I mean, basically, my stack, I just don't, for whatever reason, I've never been into the CoinJoin stuff. And so I've chosen not, I've basically been like, well, what can I do to get the same effective or close, similar effective privacy from the people I'm transacting with without CoinJoining my stuff? And this swap mechanism between Lightning, because at this point, you know, the sats are in my cold storage are coming as swaps out of Lightning, right? And so if I'm transacting with someone, I'm sending that UTXO, they're only going to be able to follow it back to whenever it's swapped out of Lightning. They can't, that's where it stops. So whenever you swap in and out of Lightning, that's where the trail, the chain analysis trail stops. Now you can go levels deeper and you can be the NSA and track the Lightning transaction graph and all that shit. But once again, I'm not concerned about that. I just want the person I'm transacting with peer to peer to not see. I want to limit their visibility into to my stack. And so that's how I do it. And the beautiful thing about it, man, is that you can now, as the person who's receiving the cash, now I could walk out into the, if people see that I get this few hundred dollars in cash or whatever at the meetup, they can try and take it from me in the parking lot. I'm confident enough in my own myself to like not let that happen. Like, fuck off, dude. You know, I'm not giving you $200. Go home. But this gives you the opportunity to show the transaction happening at the meetup. And so I didn't mention this yet, but I also, when I make these transactions, I charge a premium for the sats that I'm selling for cash. Because this is Bitcoin that I've earned. This is Bitcoin that I've mined. This isn't just, I didn't just buy it from the exchange and sell it to you for a 2% spread or something stupid like that, right? This is, I put work into it. And it's to show also that when people see these transactions happening at the meetup, maybe they'll start to think, oh, hey, Rev is catching a, he's catching a premium on his Bitcoin by selling at the meetup. Whereas when I sell the Bitcoin on the exchange, I have to pay them to sell the
a
Bitcoin.
Negative premium. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And so when you get liquidity at the, and guess what, dude, not a lot of people are selling Bitcoin at the meetups. And so when you do offer Bitcoin for sale, it's, in my experience, it's been very easy to have people line up and want to buy it. And so there's liquidity there, you know, to a reasonable degree. I don't know if you're going to sell $100,000 worth of Bitcoin, you might not be able to find that at the meetup. But a few hundred bucks here and there, man, surely you can sell that at the meetup. And you can catch a premium. And then you create an example for everyone else when they want to sell a few hundred bucks. Don't go to the exchange. Don't go with the convenience. Why would you pay 2% or 1% or 0.5% even when you could make 4, 5, 6, 7, 8? What, it depends on what, how many other people are in your local area selling Bitcoin for cash. You know, all right. But you know, reasonable amounts. It's just, it makes sense to wait, you know, lower your time preference, lower the convenience, go to the meetup, get a little bit of extra Bitcoin out of the deal or cash out of the deal, right? Get more purchasing power and don't put your Bitcoin back into the KYC ecosystem. When you sell the Bitcoin to somebody at your local meetup, you might be able to earn it back from them someday. You know that it's probably just going into their cold storage at least, and they're not just going to turn right around and sell it. Why the hell would they do that? Why would they pay a premium, get the Bitcoin, and turn around and sell it a few months later? They're stacking that shit. They want to hold it. So,
all right. Well, I think at this point, that was our episode. So no guests this time, but we are trying our best. And I wanted to give this is maybe my little segue here, because I think I might have mentioned it at the last show, but if not, you know, because we've been spending a fair amount of time on our, what I'm calling like our V for V section of the show. And part of the reason why we spend so long on the V for V section of our show, which I don't know, maybe we spend more time than other shows. Maybe we don't spend as much time as some shows. I guess I haven't polled the entire industry here, but it seems like we do spend quite a bit of time on it. But that's because, you know, we are trying to find as many ways as we can to reciprocate the value that you're sending us. And the value chain starts with us producing high value content and putting it on the RSS feed, putting it on the podcast stream. And so we had been talking about, you know, we have had the last 5 episodes in a row, we've had guests on. Those have been some very high signal episodes. If you haven't listened to all those, highly recommend. I can't even think of an episode in the list here that didn't come with some really high signal content. So with this kind of solo rip with just Rev and I, this was our attempt to try to make this as high signal as we could. Like, what's some of the best content that we could have out there that we haven't talked about yet, that we really think people are asking about, that we think maybe people are underutilizing? So hopefully you found this episode valuable. And so now we're going to transition to the V for V section of the show, and we're going to find out what you guys found valuable from our past episodes. So the way we like to start these is we like to start with our leaderboards. And so I think no real big changes to the fundamental structure about how we're actually calculating and displaying our leaderboards this time. So this should be mostly just same old. And so we'll see if there's any changes this week. So the last time we ran our leaderboards was almost exactly 1 week ago when we recorded episode 12. And so if I'm looking at our leaderboards right now, we like to start with our episode leaderboard. So these are the episodes that have received the most sats. So I believe this is still the same order as it was last week, starting with episode 9 with Sir Spencer. That episode is up to 95,022 sats. And that was Growing Slow, Build Strong Communities, KC Bitcoiners. Second place is with Augie, episode 5, 64,672 sats. The meetup is the Farmers Market. That was the title of that one. And as we've mentioned before, also Kansas City. Third place is episode 1, our pilot episode. Still up way up high in the leaderboards here with 59,934 sats. Episode 2 with GC and James from Jersey City. Their episode 2, brought in 47,154 sats. And that was titled Meetups are the Ultimate Web of Trust, which we talked about just here tonight. And fifth place is episode 7 with just Rev and I again, where we were talking about a lot of V4V stuff with 39,513 sats. And that was how meetups can benefit from V4V, Noster, and value chains. So I believe that's pretty much the same order that they were in last time. I will repeat again what I like to say about this leaderboard. The reason why this is a leaderboard is because these are the episodes that are the people who listen to our show think have brought the highest value content, because that's what they've zapped, right? Sats are the signal. So if you're looking for an episode, if you're new to the show, or you are trying to think, maybe you should, if you're trying to weigh, maybe I should go back and listen to their old ones, maybe there's too many now. Well, maybe start with this list. This would be a great place to start. These are apparently the episodes that our listeners have found to be the most valuable.
So it's very interesting that episode 1 has been hanging around this whole time. We haven't really gotten a lot of new boosts to that episode. It was almost
every once in a while.
It's very much like when you start the new, like the Connecticut Bitcoin meetup, right? I mean, everyone comes from far and wide to kick it off. That episode was much like that, where the support came to just get us going. And I really do appreciate everybody that boosted that first episode and built the momentum for us and got us excited. But needless to say, that episode is also, you know, it's very much like what this episode and that first episode are kind of like linked together, I think, where if you listen to the first episode after listening to this episode, you will get a very clear picture of a lot of the potential of what, like how to start the meetup and how to get it rolling. And then from there, what it can really do for you.
So I'm going to use this opportunity, since I just pulled it up myself as you started talking about it. I'd like to highlight a feature of our podcast website. So localbitcoiners.com. Each episode has its own page now. So episode 1 is localbitcoiners.com/EP001. Or you can just, you know, go to the site and click on episode 1. So on that, you can see the stats for that episode. You can get the links to the hosts and the guests, and you can see the transcript, and you can get the the show notes and everything. But you can also see the boosts that have come in just for that episode. And that's why I came over to this page, because you said we haven't gotten one recently. And you would be right. So the last time we got a boost on episode one was 20 days ago. I don't have doesn't say the date on the website. Oh, here it is. May 6th. And before that, it was April 4th. So not a ton of new ones on it. But there are, you know, people are still going back, it seems like, and listening from time to time. All right. So let's move on to our next leaderboard. So this is the leaderboard of our Ride or Dies, listeners who have boosted the most number of episodes all time. So here we do have a small change in the leaderboard from last time. First of all, we've got Matthew D still at the top of this list with a perfect 12 out of 12. So last week he was 11 out of 11. This week, 12 out of 12. That's what we're talking about. When we talk about bringing consistency to the meetups, Matthew D bringing the consistency to leaderboards. Then we've got Shadrach, second place, with 7 episodes. And now we've got a tie for third place with God's Death, and Nostergang is in there now in the top 3. So tied for third with God's Death, Nostergang at 6 episodes.
We've been talking about Nostergang coming up there. We're like, man, Nostergang's been boosting them. Where are they going to be? Where they're going to show up at some point. Here they are. Welcome, Nostergang, to the leaderboards.
And so, again, I'm going to take another minute here to shill a little bit of some of the cool stuff we've got on our website. So on our website, I talked about it a little bit last time, but we've got a stats page now. And so on the stats page, if you're interested, like, oh, well, where am I on this leaderboard? Well, you can come down to our episode leaderboard, and if you switch over to, it's the wrong section. If you go to our supporters leaderboard, you can see, if you go to episode supported, and there you'll see, there's our top 4, just like I read off. But then we extend that down to our top 10. So some other notables that didn't make the Kind One Noster note but are on our website would be like Alice A., Otis Bittmeyer, Jer, Wartime. They're all tied with 4 episodes apiece. Also KT and William the French, 3 episodes apiece. So you can kind of, if you're wondering how far am I from getting onto this leaderboard, well, you can go onto our website, check the stats page, and see if you're, you know, if you're in the top 10, you know, maybe you can figure out how to get up a little bit higher.
And you don't have to boost a lot to get on the leaderboard. You know, go back and
that's right.
Just shoot us whatever. You could say nonsense. I don't care. You know, that you might as well.
Totally valid.
Get some capital out of it if you're taking the time to boost. But whatever you want to do, all you got to do is go back and boost episodes you haven't boosted and you get on the leaderboard. So join us. Join the ride or dies.
All right. And the last leaderboard, these would be the single biggest boosts all time ever since the show. So this is what I've been referring to. These are our ad reads. And so if you have a product, if you have a meetup coming up, if you have a regional event coming up, if you have something cool going on that's your meetup that you want people to know about on a recurring basis as opposed to just one boost, well, if you can just get in, crack our top 5, then you're going to be on this leaderboard for as long as you're on the leaderboard. And we'll read off your notes over and over and over again. So, and actually a podcast, that's our first boost here, is kind of promoting his podcast. So Sir Spencer sent us 42,069 sats, 420.69. And his message was, thanks for having me on. Hope to continue to improve bowlafterbowl.com and continue to evolve alongside your local bitcoiners.com site, Iron Sharpens Iron. And I greatly value hearing what you guys are discovering on your value for value journey. Long live the value chain. So there you go. Perfect example. He's using this as a way to boost his own stuff, right? Go check out bowlafterbowl.com and go listen to Bowl After Bowl on your podcasting 2.0 client of choice, which I'm pretty sure, well, he always boosts us from Podcast Guru. I guess I don't know if that's what he actually listens to all his podcasts on. I'm going to assume so.
Well, and the cool thing about what Spencer's doing is like, you can, Spencer had an episode where he broke down some of the stuff that we were talking about on this show. And he gave us a value split on there. So if you go find that and you boost bowl after bowl on that value split, then we get a kick. We get a little bit of sats from it too. And this is what Spencer is doing. You know, Spencer's been doing the value chain for a lot longer, you know, for a long time. And that dude has got some tricks up his sleeve, and it's really cool to watch what they're doing. I mean, DeLorean, the co-host of that podcast, also has Homegrown Hits, which is leaning into more of the value for value music side of things. And I've been listening to that podcast recently, and I find just if you're looking for cool, creative ways to take this concept and actually put it out and utilize it, they are setting a really great example for all that.
And that's why we were so excited to have Spencer on the show, because we are new to this, and there's so much that we can learn from them, and we're still learning from them. So definitely,
iron sharpens iron.
That's right. And if you haven't checked out Bowl After Bowl, highly recommend Bowl After Bowl, and you can check out their website, bowlafterbowl.com. All right, second on the leaderboards here is 15,000 sats. This is from BTC Russell, although it's submitted as an anonymous boost. The message is, to all the folks out there boosting and thinking about starting a meetup, I would highly encourage you to take the leap and start one. Seems intimidating at first, but if you build it, they will come. You may be surprised that there are other Bitcoiners in your area. It's easier to get attendance in more populated areas. BTC Russell. So BTC Russell, I think, is coming on this show in 2 weeks. So we're going to get to hear about all the cool stuff that he's going on at his meetup, which is in
Columbia,
South Carolina.
Columbia, South Carolina. Yeah. So BTC Russell is a Meshdedelian. You know, he's part of the Meshdedel group. And, you know, we just recorded with Johnny from Charlotte. And between Johnny and BTC Russell, we're actually teasing this a little bit. We're going to be talking with SourceNode. And so this is kind of showcasing a little bit of a new format that we're kind of doing, where we're going to try and hit kind of three meetups within a region. And so with the idea, hopefully, that these folks can get stoked on hearing the podcast and finding out, just getting the gears turning on ways that they can continue to bolster these regional interactions and create some overlap between all the meetups. And so it'll be Charlotte, SourceNode. I'm pretty sure that he's in Greenville. SourceNode, I apologize if it's not Greenville, but I'm pretty sure it's Greenville. And then BTC Russell in Columbia. And these meetups are all within the range, right? You can kind of hit all of them. They're all in the same region. And that's cool, you know. So check, you know, get ready.
Yeah, we like to do what we can. Like we talked on this episode, and we've talked about it in a number of previous episodes as well. Like all the cool benefits that you get from coordinating and communicating with and going to and working with your other other meetups that are in your general area. And a really good way to do that is with these regional events. But we're trying to foster kind of a new way, which is trying to promote all these things a little bit together, give them this shared experience of coming on our podcast and hopefully getting all of their, you know, meetup members, you know, to listen to not just about their podcast, but to go listen. Hey, if you haven't checked out the Charlotte meetup, go listen to what Johnny's got to say about it. He was on the podcast that I was just on. So that type of thing, to try to just get more of this cross meetup pollination going on.
Well, and to BTC Russell's boost here, it's like if you're in between one of these meetups, now you could start a meetup just in your hometown. That's like only a half hour away from here and a half hour away from there. You're right in the middle, or roughly, whatever. And now you can create additional opportunities for cross-pollination. And so that it's just kind of trying to create some cohesiveness around a region where the Dunbar's number of a Bitcoin meetup may have been met, you know, and now you can be the one to take that overflow, right? Start to synthesize.
All right. Next boost on the list. Bitcoin is for everyone, May 22nd to 23rd, 2026. So I haven't heard much from the conclusion of the Bitcoin is for everyone event, but that was last week. So the message is, and I'll read it here, maybe we'll just do this one last time. And then going forward, maybe we'll just give them a shout out here. But join us for the largest Bitcoin-only conference on the West Coast. Bitcoin is for everyone. May 22nd, May 23rd, Pizza Day weekend, Portland, Oregon. Bitcoinisforeveryone.com. Use code, discount code Noster Insider for 21% off. So Eric, we had the good fortune of coming on, and we were really glad that we could get him in before this event, because he has been one of our longtime supporters, and we have read out these boosts now. This boost came in on April 22nd. So that is just over a month ago. We've been reading off these boosts. So there you go. I mean, there's a perfect example, right? If you have a message that you'd like us to read off week after week after week, perfect. Just get it onto the leaderboards.
And you only got to beat it by one set. And it would be really cool if someone would boost us so we don't have to read that stale event anymore, right? It's that Bitcoin is
maybe that's a reason to keep reading it, right? I'll just keep reading it until
keep hearing about Bitcoin is for everyone over and over again.
The repetition will continue.
Next thing, right?
Well, next on the list is a new-ish one. I think we read this one off last week, and it came in from Cleveland Bitcoin, and I'm almost positive when it came in as Aroa Sticks, 11,111 sats, even though on the leaderboards it says 11,109 sats. That came in from the website, and it says, Cleveland Bitcoin presents Bitcoin Pizza Day 2026, Friday, May 22nd, 7 p.m. at Saucy Brew Works downtown. Free pizza by Rhino Bitcoin. Venue accepts sats for beer. Win prizes, meet plebs. See you there. And they linked to the actual event, the Noster event for that meetup.
You know, and Bitcoin Pizza Day this is kind of maybe an opportunity to like recap Bitcoin Pizza Day, because I think I forecasted it in the last episode and it hadn't happened yet, but now it's happened. And the Bitcoin Pizza Day meetup in my area was super cool, man. It was a meetup where people brought their families, you know, and people's families got to interact. And it wasn't just like, it was a different vibe than just your average monthly meetup where it's just the dudes, you know, talking about what generators they run and what kind of fuel they run in the generators and all this kind of stuff, right? The nitty-gritty technical aspects of Bitcoin. It was people, you know, hanging out as families. And it was a very cool thing. I think that it was an opportunity for something different to happen around a meetup. And I hope that was the case at Cleveland. I know Cleveland has a really strong meetup culture, and they will be on the show. I will commit to that now, live on air. You guys are going to come on. Cleveland, we got to represent. They're doing a lot of cool shit over there.
And I'll just say in a quick shout out to Bitcoin Pizza Day. So Bitcoin Pizza Day it's probably, I'll be completely honest, I think it's probably Bitcoin's number one actual holiday. There are some other events that we celebrate, you know, like White Paper Day and, you know, January 3rd and all kinds of stuff like that, like cool things that have happened on chain at certain times. But Bitcoin Pizza Day is like, it's on every Bitcoin calendar. It's the original real Bitcoin holiday. And it's my favorite holiday because Bitcoin is money. That's what it is. Bitcoin, the reason why gold failed is because gold stopped being money. People stopped using it in day-to-day transactions for actual purchases. Nobody was using, in 2010 when this Bitcoin transaction was made, I guarantee that no one used physical gold to buy pizza that entire year, probably that entire decade. No one in the whole world used physical gold to buy pizza, but they did use Bitcoin. And that's what we do in Bitcoin. And that's why Bitcoin is better than gold, is because you can actually use it as money. You don't have to just leave it in some bank's vault somewhere and transact with pieces of paper or something. You can actually use the real bearer instrument of Bitcoin to make transactions. And so that's why we celebrate it. We celebrate it because this is why Bitcoin's going to win, because we can use this stuff to just buy pizza over the internet. It's the killer app.
Beautifully said.
All right. The last one on the list here is, again, Bitcoin is for everyone. And I'll read it off this time because if you didn't know already, the Portland Bitcoin group has meetups 6 times a month. Come check us out. So there you go. And that rounds out our leaderboards, which takes us to the next segment of the show, which is reading out the boosts that we've got since last recording, right?
That's right. We've got 8 boosts tonight. Super stoked on everyone's usage of localbitcoiners.com. That's super cool that people are really transitioning into putting that as their primary source for boosting. Maybe it's not the primary, but it's coming up. And so the first boost that we've got tonight on this recording, not tonight, it might not be tonight for you. I keep saying that. We've got 1,000 sats from Via Fountain from William the French. And so we mentioned earlier, William the French is on the borderline of getting into the leaderboards. We appreciate your continued support, William the French. And William the French says, generally enjoying the space, so different than number go up 24/7. Thank you for that. Question, is there any folklore around the 21 million number? Did Satoshi decide on 21? Many thanks. So I don't know. I like 21 because it's like, you know, I like 7, and 7 goes into 21 3 times. That's cool.
It's also half of 42. 42 is a cool number.
Yeah, 42. Well, I like 42 sat zaps more than 21 sat zaps. I'll say that.
There you go. Isn't that the, it was from the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I think 42 is the answer to the meaning of life, the universe, and everything, or something
like
that. Is
it? Okay. Wow. Well, so maybe that 42
is a big number.
Was a fan of that.
Well, half a fan. It's half of 42. But
well,
no,
maybe
I think
that's
so,
part of the code. You know, Satoshi had to.
Well,
you know,
21 million.
Make it complicated.
I guess. For those of you maybe who don't know, like maybe Rev doesn't know, 21 million is not actually in the code anywhere, because that's not how Bitcoin, it wasn't a prescribed number of coins. It was, you just define the supply schedule. And so, you know, when Bitcoin first came out, it was 50 Bitcoins in a block, 50 Bitcoins per block. It's 210,000 blocks between halvings. And that goes on until you can't split up the Bitcoin any smaller. It just keeps getting cut in half and in half again until it goes from 2 sats down to 1 sat, gets cut in half to 1 sat per block. And then it goes from 1 sat to 0. And then that's it. And then the whole supply has been released. And so when you do that math and just add up all those numbers, you get a number that's very close to 21 million. It's not actually 21 million. I forget exactly how close it is. It's quite close. It's 20,999,999, and it's off by like 3 million sats or something like that. Very close. So there you go.
So there you go.
French.
Yeah. There's not anything super exciting about it. But we can.
That's pretty exciting. I thought that was exciting.
We can make it up. You know, well, there's no folklore. You know, Satoshi didn't believe like 21 was some magic number to like of sacred geometry or something. Right. And by choosing 21, that would unleash the full potential of human flourishing or something.
Another thing that's cool, though, about the supply schedule is so think about it this way, right? So in the first epoch, right, the first halving epoch, when the Bitcoin, it was still 50 Bitcoins per block. Well, by the end of that period, 50% of all the Bitcoins had been mined. So 50 Bitcoins, 50%. So then the next block is 25 Bitcoin per block. And that epoch contains 25% of all the Bitcoins ever mined. And then 12.5 is 12.5% of all the Bitcoin. So it's kind of cool. It works out that way. I don't know. I always thought that was cool. I'm a nerd, though. Comes with the territory.
The engineer in you can't help but come
admire
out.
The beauty of it. That's right.
It's worth paying attention to. Next, we got 112 sats via fountain from Nostrigang. And they say, website looks great. Smiley face emoji. And we appreciate that feedback. And the website's going to look a lot greater coming up here because we've been working behind the scenes with Soul Exporter on some cool new graphical design for
I'm super stoked.
And so we don't have a time when that's going to be released, but it is happening. And the website is going to continue to look even greater. But Nostrigang, congratulations on hitting the leaderboard. Thanks for the boost. And, we'll keep pushing that value in your direction. Thanks for the feedback. Next, we got 2,021 sats via fountain from Simon James. And they say, sitting in my car listening to the pod when I suddenly hear a shout out from Battersea Bitcoiners. Great show, guys. This is the signal. And so, Simon James, I think, I can't remember now offhand, but I think that they're doing some kind of newsletter or just aggregation of all the stuff that's going on in the UK right now around meetups. And so if you go to the local Bitcoiners NPub, you will see me re-noting stuff from Simon James and this NPub. Sorry, Simon James, I can't remember what it is right now. But yeah, thanks for the boost. Battersea Bitcoiners, I think, might be in this one too. At least they were in the last one. Next, we got 221 sats via fountain from Alice A. And they say, I have reservations onboarding merchants to CoinOS. My local hot dog merchant was using it for a few years and had his entire balance swept, 200,000 plus K sats.
Ouch.
200K sats gone from the CoinOS has had some issues in the past with their, I don't know what's happened, but it is a custodial service, right? And so you're trusting them. And if they mess up, and it sounds like CoinOS has messed up in the past, you can lose your Bitcoin. And so 200K sats is a lot of Bitcoin for me to mess around with on some kind of custodial service. Like I use Minibit's wallet for a lot of my Nostr interactions. And there's no way I'm ever keeping 200K sats on Minibit's wallet, right? Like it's just,
agreed.
And so this comes into the cultural capital component of the thing where, you know, when you onboard somebody to a wallet or a service or whatever, and that shit changes over time. I mean, there was a time when I was telling everyone that Moon Wallet was great. I love Moon Wallet. And then the transaction.
It was great for a long time. I mean, that was like the setting. I used Moon Wallet for a long time. That was my go-to wallet of choice for a long time.
And it still is great. It just wasn't great for a period of time. And when the fees were high on chain, Moon Wallet stopped to function the way you would expect Moon Wallet to function. And so then I had to go back and kind of tell everyone, like, look, maybe you should not use Moon Wallet. And so this is where the meetups can come into play, where it's like instead of you onboarding the merchant and taking all the responsibility of the stack that you tell them to build for themselves and how they're going to manage their Bitcoin and all this stuff, and all the responsibility is on you, instead you bring the merchant to the meetup. And at the meetup, they can get an aggregate of all the different shit that people are using and choose for themselves. But either way, if you're using custodial services, be very considerate or aware that this is a custodian and they can rug you at any time. And it might not be through malicious reasons, right? They might not be terrible people. They might be the greatest people you ever met, but shit can happen. And they're the custodian and it's their Bitcoin.
This was I already mentioned it and I already have it open. And so it's kind of top of mind. When I did my self-custody security fundamentals, that's actually how I started. I started by saying, okay, you know, your coins are on the exchange. And some people, I guess I had a, in this presentation, I had a screenshot of Udi saying, you should keep your Bitcoins on the exchange because all people are idiots and it's much safer on the exchange. And then I proceed to explain how many exchanges have been not careful at all with your Bitcoin and have lost it.
Exchanges are also idiots, right? They can also be idiots just like you.
And it's not even their Bitcoin. Like if it's your Bitcoin, you're going to be a lot more careful with it, but it's not even theirs. It's yours. They're just holding it for you. And so, you know, it's leaving your Bitcoin on the exchange is actually not safe at all. I would not recommend it. And in this case, it didn't work out. And that's a real bummer because that's a really bad experience for a merchant who got onboarded to Bitcoin.
In any instance where you're using a custodian, the strategy in my recommendation should be that the custodian is a pass-through, right? You're only, you know, when you're interacting with this custodian that you're only going to be letting them custody that Bitcoin for a period of time, not forever. You have a plan to eventually get that out of their control and into your control at whatever threshold or however, whatever mechanism you decide. But the strategy should be approaching that relationship is that they're providing a service of convenience for you. And that convenience can end at any time. And so you have to be willing to risk only what you have to decide what you're willing to risk there. And in this case, 200K sats is a lot to risk, in my opinion. So it's unfortunate, but it happens. And it's a good lesson to learn from. Next, we got 100 sats via Fountain from Bullish Clips. And Bullish, you know, Bullish has been interacting with our NPub a lot, and we really appreciate that. And you just did the sats market, didn't you?
Dude, I missed it. I can't believe I had to miss it again. It was, I had a family commitment that I had not remembered at the time. And so I couldn't attend, which was
you missed out. You missed out on some sales.
I did,
man.
Sell a glass though. I did make a sale. My storefront was there. I just wasn't there. So I did make one sale. I got that in the mail this morning, actually. So yeah.
Well, okay. So let's read what Bullish has to say. And Bullish says, "Bullish on y'all's thoughts on bullish market. Hope to see you at the next one, Reed, and looking forward to seeing some teas from Rev." And as I teased, I've got not just teas, I've got a lot of shelf-stable, good products to ship out to anyone on Noster that wants to buy them. You know, I say having a podcast and choosing to have sponsors is like, why would you have sponsors when you could just use the podcast to promote the stuff that you're doing already? And so in this instance, like everyone's listening, hey, I'm going to have some stuff for sale. If you want to support me and the podcast, you could just buy my stuff. And guess what? When you buy that, you're going to get some high quality, valuable stuff for it, for whatever sats you put down. And that's the whole idea of how economies should work. But yeah, the bullish market is something that I'm super keen on and I'm looking forward to participating in myself. It's a bad time because it lines up with a Bitcoin meetup for me. And so,
well, next month should be better because so it's the 21st of every month. And
oh, it's the 20, so it does change. It's changes. Not every always on
That's
a Thursday.
Right.
Yeah. This one was a bad one because
so
it was on a Thursday.
But the next one, it looks like, is a Sunday. June 21st is a Sunday. And so usually if he does them on Sundays, I guess I don't know what he's going to do for the time. But, you know, it's a weekend, so it'll be at least different.
Bullish, and you're just playing Russian roulette with your 21 with the 21st of the month, man. You never know if it's going to land on a weekday when it's a meetup, then no one's going to show. I'm just joshing, but.
And just for your knowledge, so when you get your stuff available, I'm presuming that you're going to put this stuff for sale on like a NIP99 type shop. Well, the bullish market, technically, he likes, you know, because he doesn't know exactly, maybe you don't want all your products for sale at the bullish market. Maybe if some of them are only for your meetup or something. So he has you kind of build your little storefront before the market thing starts. And now he's got an import from NIP99. And so when you log in with Nostr and you go to build your storefront, you can just click import from my existing listings and you just checkbox the ones you want. And bam, that just like I set up my store in like 30 seconds. I just logged in, clicked the ones I wanted and hit okay. And then my storefront was built.
That's sick. So much cool, sick stuff happening with the marketplaces, man. And I'm keeping my eye out for the developments of that. The Airbnb, like short-term rental stuff specifically is what I'm really keeping my eye out on. So next we've got 418 sats via localbitcoiners.com, but I'm assuming that was 420.
Definitely was.
And that's from Reed. And well, actually not Reed, but Reed via the Western Mass Bitcoin meetup. And they say, boosting our next meetup from localbitcoiners.com/meetups. And linked in the, just embedded right there in the boost, there is a meetup event for Western Mass Bitcoin meetup number 46, Sunday, June 7th, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at 1 Northampton Street, East Hampton, Mass. And let's see if I click on it, if there's any more details.
So while that's coming up, I'll talk about one other website feature I wanted to mention. So we did add a feature to the website to make it easier to add your meetups. So for example, I had already added all of our upcoming meetups into Nostr as NIP, 23? I forget the number. Like, you know, meetup, like events on Nostr. And so now when I went to go boost my meetup through the website, I can just, when I logged in with Nostr, I can say, oh, my meetup's already on Nostr. And I click a button and it'll show me all my meetups. And I can just pick off which one do you want to boost? And so each one will have a little boost button. And then if you click boost, you can add some sats to it, add a little message, and it shows up, you know, on our boost page, just like this note did. So this was partially a test of the tool, partially wanted to do it to kind of show people that it was possible. And I figured it would give me a good hook to talk about the developments on the website.
We're always trying to make it easier to, we recognize like, all right, if you want to boost your meetup and it should be a Nostr event and you only have it on meetup.com or whatever. We're just trying to create the least friction possible so that way you can get the signal out there, put the meetup out there on Nostr and gain access to. We're looking forward to we're zooming out here, dude. We're low time preference. We're looking forward to the future where all of these meetups will be on Nostr, and then there will be all of these maps and everything else that's aggregating all this meetup information. So when you go on a road trip or you're traveling, you're moving to a new place, or you're just learning about Bitcoin meetups, you can go search on Nostr and boom, all the meetups are there for you to access through whatever lens, whatever your favorite place is to look at that shit. And so we're just trying to exemplify the tools that we're building while we're playing around. It's really cool, guys. You should do it. Just play.
If you boost your meetup via one of these functions, now on our meetups page, so localbitcoiners.com/meetups, it will actually feature all the meetups that have been boosted will be listed on our website. So if you want another place to get the word out about your meetup, you could boost it and it will show up on our meetups page of our website.
Yeah, so the website is also becoming one of these aggregators just by people boosting the meetup. And this is all because Nostr is cool and it's all integrated and it's easy to do. So next we got 5,000 sats via localbitcoiners.com. And that's from Matthew D, True Ride or Die. And Matthew D says, boosting from the website for the first time using Blitz Wallet via Nostr Wallet Connect. Sometimes it just takes a little push for me to use the tools. This took a little bit of work on my part, but I had fun doing it. Check out Blitz Wallet. It's a great wallet with very active development. And so, first of all, Matthew D, that's really cool that you went through the friction of trying to boost from the website. It sounds like you got it figured out. And Matthew D got it figured out via Blitz Wallet, which is another guy in the Michigan culture, just in the Lake Satoshi area. He's been developing this wallet for years. And, you know, I've not actually played with it yet until Matthew D did this boost, and I downloaded it and I played around. And I would say that it's, as far as a custodial wallet goes, it's a good one. There's a bunch of cool stuff like you can do, like if you're at the restaurant, you're at the bar before the meetup or after the meetup, and you want to do a split the check, and everyone pays you Bitcoin. There's a way to kind of do that in this wallet, and you can buy there's an events map in there, or like places merchants accepting Bitcoin map, much like Cash App has. Where it's BTC maps, you can go look around where you can spend your Bitcoin. You can do swapping in and out of USD, some USD token. I don't know exactly how it works. But anyways, the guy developing Blitz Wallet is a Michigan guy. And Matthew D is using the wallet to boost the show. And so it's another great example of going to the meetups, meeting the people, learning about the stuff that they're building, and making that value chain react, you know. Look at how many connections have just been made with just this one boost.
These are the types of connections that you make when you actually take the time to go to the Bitcoin meetups.
Thank you, Matthew D. Next, we've got, finally, this is the final boost in the night. 2,221 sats via Fountain from KT. And KT says, love all the work you're doing pioneering in this space. And you know, KT, I appreciate that. And I'm glad you recognize it because we're trying hard. We are trying hard to like prove that some of this, like these tools are out there. We can do this shit. And we're just showing some way of using all this stuff to make it happen. And hopefully people, when you listen to this episode, not only can you learn about how to do your best at the Bitcoin meetup, but also how you can interact with Nostr to an effective degree to build capital, to get this value chain reacting.
And I'll just say on a personal note, I was thinking about this just recently, and it must have been when I was listening to a recent Bugle episode, but I was reflecting a little bit on my Bitcoin path or my Bitcoin journey. And I very much feel like maybe it was with this podcast specifically, but I kind of feel like this has been a transition of sorts for me going from the pleb space into the pioneer space. And, you know, maybe that started with the Bitcoin meetup. There's other proof of work stuff. You know, I've written articles and things like that in the past, but a lot of those aren't necessarily exploring new territories the way that we are on this podcast. Like we're trying out new stuff. We're using the tools, we're building the tools. And it's just been an incredibly fun and rewarding experience. So very excited to be kind of on the other side of that pleb pioneer divide, so to speak. So it's been a fun and interesting journey. I'm really having a good time with this, doing all the cool things. So thank you, KT.
And as one last final shout out, well, and actually, so KT had a call out to try and help get a Bitcoin meetup started where they're at. And I think I was actually able to make a connection to where this might start to happen. So KT's interaction with the show has led potentially, I'm pretty confident that this is going to lead to a new Bitcoin meetup getting started. And so this is what we're trying to do with the show, is allow people to find these connections out there, get connected up, get some Bitcoin meetups going, and start to overlap the territories until we're one cohesive culture. Right now, we're a diaspora, and that's great. That's decentralized. It's hard to stop. But once we start to all overlap and get together, that's where we can start to see some fireworks. And, you know, Reed, you kind of mentioned, as far as the podcast goes and everything, we're kind of in a cohort, we've noticed, of some other podcasts that have kind of popped up at the same time. And I feel like it's worth it to just shout them out too, because I've been enjoying the content as much as I haven't been able to like boost their shows. And I get it. You know, you can't boost every episode of every podcast on schedule. It's just hard to keep up with it and say something thoughtful. I mean, maybe, you know, you should just say like, great episode with 100 sats, just to like a thumbs up. But I've even failed to do that. But needless to say, we've got the Yada podcast, You Are the Algorithm, with Permanerd and Oshi, and they're putting out a good podcast right now, and I've been enjoying their content and listening to what they've got going on, and seeing how they're trying to educate their audience. And we've already mentioned it, the 49th Parallel with Boomer and Business Cat, and they're taking this more thoughtful approach of curating the content of their episodes to hit on certain aspects around what it's like to actually be a Bitcoiner and truly live in Bitcoin culture and how that affects your psyche and everything. We've got the Open Markets podcast, which is really shedding light onto all of the cool shit that you can do now that this Nostr thing exists and there's actually users in it and people are trying to spend their Bitcoin and participate in Bitcoin culture by using their Bitcoin as money, and the NIP99 Gamma Spec and all of that. And that's been a great podcast to listen to. And we're all doing this together, and we've all got a different angle for how we're putting this value out into the Nostr community. The big key here is that we're all very Nostr facing podcasts. We're focused on the Nostr culture. You know, the listeners are people on Nostr, and we're just so happy to be, you know, part of this movement together. And so everyone out there, you know, all these podcasts, all these people starting meetups, this is how we're doing it. We're talking about each other. We're reacting the value chain, and we're getting this cultural capital built together.
We're all very much leaning heavy into the Nostr ecosystem in different areas, which is so cool. And we all happen to start right around the same time, like within a few weeks of each other almost. And so we're all, and the other thing too, is I think all those podcasts, we're all, except for maybe Business Cat, we're all relatively new to being podcasters. And so we're all kind of learning this whole thing together. And so it's been really cool to see what, like, how are they doing the, hey, did you notice, like we were talking pre-show, you know, hey, did you notice the Yada guys started doing their boosts at the beginning? Like, oh, that's very interesting. Like maybe we should think about doing that. Or, you know, like a lot of the other things that they talk about. I've learned a lot about the NIP99 stuff from the Open Markets guy, but also from the Yada guys. And the 49th Parallel is, it's been a very nice piece of, I guess, entropy, as you would say, to my 40 hours a week, even though I don't listen to anywhere near 40 hours a week anymore. I'm sure I did at one point, but no longer. But it's really nice to just hear, it's just Bitcoiners talking about, I mean, I think it's kind of like men's issues, but, you know, it's just nice to hear other guys talking about what it's like to be a Bitcoiner, because it's kind of a unique experience. So I've been enjoying all of those podcasts. So great to give them a shout out here at the end.
All right, Reed. Well, if you don't have anything else to say, if we got it all done, is that it?
Roll the outro.
Episode complete. If you run a Bitcoin meetup and want to talk about it here, reach out. Check the show notes for contact info, link to meetup organizer resources on GitHub, and more. Send us a boost of any size and advertise your next meetup. We'll read it out on the next episode. And remember, attend your local meetup or start your own. Local Bitcoiners are always just one meetup away.